Blog Talk Radio.
Two things are true about students in urban American public schools. There are some students who do well and go on in life to become productive citizens, while there is a secondary population of students who go on to live lives that aren't so socially acceptable. While this secondary population of students, some 18% in Nashville, Davidson County, exhibit a number of behavioral issues and face extradition, it's no wonder why those students struggle to succeed academically. If they can't follow the simple rules of order, how are they expected to be focused enough to learn? I'm Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and I have recognized the needs of this population continually being unmet despite the best efforts of many dedicated educators over the years. As a result, my experience as a former special education teacher, youth counselor, and candidate for local and state offices, I've developed a school model to help address this troubled population. Dockery Christian Academy is a private, non-denominational Christian school whose primary focus is engaging parents as partners with educators and teachers in order to develop pro-social character for student learners. I'd love to share more information with you about this innovative education model. So please connect with me at www.dockeryacademy.org. That's D-O-C-K-E-R-Y, academy.org. Connect with us on Facebook at Dockery Christian Academy, or use the hashtag at 2020DCA. Thank you. I look forward to engaging you. Together we can make a difference for all of our children.
You're much more than the struggles that you go through. You're not defined by your pain, so let it go. You're not a victim.
Well, greetings and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're grateful for each and every one of you who have joined us in the past, who will join us tonight, and who will join us in the future. We're grateful again. 657-383-0944. That is the number to call to get in where you fit in, right here on Talk Straight. Well, you heard the advertisement announcement with the focus on educating our most at-risk young people. This is open mic night. This is open mic night. So we welcome you to share your thoughts and your ideas. A lot going on around our country. And children are back in school here in Nashville, and I think in most of the surrounding counties as well now. So I'm glad to see them back, and now there seems to be a push to try to catch up for some of the academic loss. I'm happy to see that. Glad for that. But the real question now is, where should parents stand on regrouping? How much should they be any more involved, any less? Should they hold to account the school system itself, right? Should they seek to partner to a greater extent with the parent, the teachers of their parents, of their children, I'm sorry. You know, so these are some things here. We've got a lot going on relative to and what have you. There's elections and all sorts of things that are taking place now, and people are in various positions. Guess what? At the end of the day, we're still American citizens. And at some point, we ought to tell ourselves that the most important thing is for us to be one, united. United States of America. You've heard the accent. the phrase, united we stand, divided we fall. See? So I'm not asking anyone to stop being a good member of your political party. But pull your parties together, just the one America. Okay? All right, 657-383-0944. That's the number to call. It's open mic. It's open mic night. Hopefully Pastor Wally will join us here tonight and others as they see fit. But we are striving to keep the airways open. That's what we're striving to do, and to maintain wholesome, healthy dialogue. If we can do that, then we'll be in good shape. While I await you to call me, Facebook, thank you, those that may join us live here, call this number, 657-383-0944. And while I wait on others to call in, because it's open mic, and in case you're new to the show, what that means is normally I have a designated topic for the evening. And we strive to stay close to that topic with our information, comments, and questions. And I offer a monologue, some context and background for, as the host and the producer of the show, the position that's there. Then we open it up for dialogue. And we, so far, we've done pretty good with that. Well, sometimes I be quiet, shut my mouth, and I let you come up with the topic. You discuss or bring up the issue of discussion, whatever's on your heart. Oftentimes we may have a number of heated topics, and perhaps you didn't get a chance to really say everything you wanted to, but this is an opportunity for you to do that, all right? So that's what open mic is, open mic night. This is for the callers here. I realize that we've had in the recent month or so, a few weeks, we've had a couple of evenings where we didn't air, and I'd like to explain that we've been striving to keep it open, but our schedule's just gotten really, really busy, and as much as we'd like to keep the national dialogue going, and you pray for us that we can do that the best we can, okay, but there may be times where we have to play a previously recorded show, or we just may miss you. We reduced our airing times from Tuesday and Thursday to just Tuesday, all right? And we scheduled the time for an hour and a half from 7 Central to 8:30. Sometimes that may vary. That may vary. We certainly don't want to cut off robust discussion, but it's really a platform for you to speak and for us to hear you and for us to engage in, again, substantive or wholesome dialogue on a national level. We've been grateful over the years to have callers call in from various places. As far as Canada, so far, Toronto, Canada, to be specifically, but we encourage everybody, wherever you are, thanks to the participation from Chicago area, from St. Louis, from New Orleans, from Mississippi, from Alabama, from places as Indiana, from Michigan, Birmingham area, as well as Selma, Alabama. New York has been gracious enough to join us and to respond. You know, we've had people from the Carolinas, from Virginia, Richmond, Virginia. We're grateful for dialogue and conversation from individuals from a couple of other places. Wherever you're calling from, you know what I'm trying to say, out of Illinois. Mama D out of Peoria, Illinois. That's what I'm trying to say. You know, when you start trying to call names, you mess up because you don't all the time get everybody's name right. All I'm trying to say is we appreciate you. All right? Tonight, wherever you are in the radio hemisphere, the podcast hemisphere, give us a call here tonight. If you're listening from the podcast platform, give us a call. I'd love to hear from you. California. I forgot about California. I'd love to hear from you. Portland, Oregon. I don't want to overlook Portland, Oregon for their contribution to our national dialogue here. And these are recorded shows. Every night after the show airs, it's recorded, and you can always go back and listen and share it. My hope is that it's an instructional basis for someone, right? And the dialogue can be used to trigger, to bolster, and encourage proactive thought and the outcomes of proaction, right? That's really where we started it. It really began as a connection for a lecture series targeting 10 cities that had similar socioeconomic issues. And so our guests were from those cities, and we invited them to come on and talk to those people in those respective cities or areas that we were touring. And it kind of evolved. We started this back in 2016, and we've been blessed to be able to at least stay around here a little while anyway, you understand. And we're grateful for that, and we look to try to keep going as best we can, the conversation and the dialogue. So, 657-383-0944, that's the number to call if you'd like to join us tonight. I'd like to hear from you. I sure would. Yes, I would. I sure like to hear from you. Give me a call. Holler at me. Give me a ring. Okay. Having said that, I was going to play the original. You may from time to time hear the intro message for the show vary. But I was going to play the very first one. And I also should explain that you hear a link for our nonprofit BFC missions. That website is no longer up and going. We've done some other things since then. I just want to clarify that. But if you want to reach me, you can shoot me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. Or you can give me a call at 615. This is off the air now. You can give me a call at 615-498-4669. You know, quarterly. All right, but to reach us tonight in the podcast studio, you would call 657-383-0944. And we'll bring you right into the conversation. I hope you can join us here. We'll keep going here just for a little while longer. I'm going to go ahead and play this commercial that started us out. I'll cue this up for you. And why this is relevant, because interestingly enough, in many ways across urban America, we find ourselves too many young people in this same predicament, right? And oddly enough, now the case is being made to give them a second, third, and fourth chance that becomes a real danger to innocent victims. On the other side, I'll tell you about a incident in Chicago was looking at. Of course, there's too many of them all over the place, but we'll discuss that. Let's listen to it for a second.
They call me Poop. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up and be a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked, well, I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
Needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
Okay, so you can see years ago, almost 7 years ago now, interestingly enough, what we have seen since that time are more incidents of at-risk African-American males having direct engagement with law enforcement. 2015 was an explosive year socially in that the Mike Brown incident out of Missouri, out of St. Louis, Missouri, or Ferguson, Missouri, I should say, it ignited the emotions and the tensions. And the media certainly made it very, very pronounced. Shortly after that, in Baltimore, Maryland, Freddie Gray, another incident, it became a hotbed issue. Shortly after that, he wasn't a young man, but the brother out of Staten Island, New York, who wound up losing his life in engagement with law enforcement. Time kept on going. We had more 2 years ago. There were more in between. Breonna Taylor was an incident. Philando Castile, and there are others in Tamir Rice, Cleveland area. We had this big issue 2 years ago with George Floyd. You see. Now, that don't account for the many deaths and instances where there were not police involvement, but died at the hands of someone that looked like them in their neighborhood. And it greatly put them at risk. They're still at risk now. I was going to talk about Chicago. Brazen shootout that left one dead, reportedly, and another severely injured, and everybody else got it running. Right in the parking lot now. But this seemed to have become acceptable as commonplace. When you think about what we were trying to do 6 years ago in bringing awareness, providing solutions and answers, and trying to orientate people to things that can be done from city to city. Because what we found out is that no matter where you were, one of our cities was even small, Columbus, Mississippi, only about 26,000 people in the population. But they had almost identical issues as they did in Birmingham or Bessemer or in Selma, or as they did in New Orleans, or as they did in Liberty City, Florida, right? Or as they did in Chicago or Indianapolis or Detroit. Same issues. And guess who it was? African-American males. Most often, it was black-on-black crime. I know that don't sound good, and I don't like to say it, but it's the truth. If you're going to resolve the problem, you have to tell the truth about the problem. You understand? Here we are in 2022. Now, what's going to happen is things are going to continue if the people involved don't change their behavior. Perhaps I'm a little more gray-haired and better looking than I was 6 years ago. But what has not changed is the need, if not me, for someone to be proactive enough to address these issues. Academically, what has happened in the last 6 years? Well, we've had more people to drop out of school and or wind up incarcerated, on the streets, drunk out on drugs, homeless. Yeah. We've had more people to find themselves in a state of despair, you see, and particularly black males who there is a serious concern about political correctness as it relates to their identity, their purpose, and their function, especially in the context of family. Fear that if I talk about being a husband and a father responsible for a wife and children, that might offend somebody. Because the growing norm is that families are not supposed to have two people in it, a husband and a wife, father and a mother. But it's supposed to be acceptable for you for there to be single parenting and now alternative parenting. You see? Those are things we should have a discussion about, but more importantly, you should teach your children. You should teach your children about. And I would hope that in the end, well-meaning, rational adults would be able to sustain such conversation and dialogue. See? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just out of pocket here. I'm not sure. But I believe that there is an opportunity for urban American neighborhoods and communities to stop what they're doing and reboot. Pastor Waller is a co-host. He's been so for the last 6 years, and he's written two books, and he and I both have talked extensively about the disdain or the lack of interest for proaction and people being informed, educated, and empowered through knowledge. One of the things that he often focuses on is that having community, quote unquote, in his own words, he's adamant now about making the difference, especially in the things that he sees. And I appreciate that about him. I know that there are other individuals who desire to do the same. And oftentimes people want to see a difference, but they don't know where to begin. See, we have a tendency to reflectively, I should say, go to the children. Everybody want to deal with the babies. And I would argue, and I contend, that the babies are not the problem all by itself. You need to be able to engage with parents of those children. You need to be able to get them to understand the need for whatever change it is that you believe the children need to make. Because that's who's going to sustain it in their natural environment at home and so forth and so on. The challenge, though, is getting grown people, chronologically grown people, who are assumed to be responsible adults to help you with the follow-through. Unless you're going to take those children away from them, take over, you're going to become their parent permanently. See what I mean? And the frustration is, well, we put the effort and we put the resources in it, and look where it went. And they went right back to the same thing they were doing. That just speaks to the subcultural nature of the issues. Now, some people didn't like me talking about urban America. didn't like me referring to urban American males. Explain what we mean by urban. And ironically, the definition of urban is vastly changing in major cities as federal dollars and private resources are gentrifying those cities and running the population of people that were there oftentimes for generations out because of economic shifts. So you tell me that that doesn't speak to the need for folk right now and to get it right. See, these babies are coming up now. The best chance for them to have economic independence, to control the quality of their life outside of the government or anybody else giving them anything, is to establish themselves educationally and academically. That's the best chance, right? And with that, they can make it, you know? And it's been my experience, here goes my good friend here, Pastor Waller, it's been my experience that people want to make it. People want to do good. They want to be happy. Even sometimes when we don't know exactly how to make ourselves happy. You know, Pastor Ball, I don't want to be this fat head and good looking, but what can I do? You know what I mean? Help me, somebody. Help me. My good friend, Pastor Ball, our co-host, is online with us tonight. Pastor's open mic. We've opened up the floor to anybody, and right now it's, first it was just me and the Holy Ghost in the audience. Now it's you, me, the Holy Ghost in the audience, the listening audience. So give us a call here, 573-383-0944. We'd be glad to have you. And Pastor, I was rushing to get over here to the office so I can open up this thing, keep this thing going, because I didn't want to mess up and not air again like we did week before last. So, but welcome.
Right.
What's going on?
Everything's all right.
Okay.
Just constantly work.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Everything's all right.
Okay.
How about on your end?
Business. Very, very busy. We're trying to make some things happen on this end, man, and I realize that it's a lot going on, and you got to stick with it. You don't balance all of it. But we're grateful. You know, our ultimate goal is to be able to manifest an educational experience for at-risk males. And the more I talk to people, the more I realize how important that is, Pastor.
Without
and
a doubt.
I'm not knocking anybody else, but you see how we keep on slipping in the darkness. Look like we're going backwards. And some people, not everybody.
Yeah.
Not everybody, but there's some folks look like they're just getting worse and worse, man. Ain't getting no better. But that's still hope. I'm sorry, you were going to say something.
Well, that's good enough, man, just knowing that there's still hope in the midst of it all. And education is a big thing, man. That's right on target, brother. That's just the way it is. It's education that's needed, and you're a man that is equipped with it. So, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
There's no need to deny it, as you just said. You wouldn't
they don't need
to deny
the
office just to bring forth to make sure. So it's like it's good to admit when you have something versus admit that you don't have it.
But either way,
you can admit to it, that's not a bad thing. It's not like you're boasting in yourself. It's just something that you got and you deserve to let it be known, and that's what you're doing. Your education is needed, brother.
You know what I realized, though, Pastor? I realized that I'm not the only one. I was last week, I ran into the gentleman that's going to be the principal of Stratford High School. I said, I taught there for a few years, man. And I said, so what kind of difference do you think you can make? Well, we're going to do the best we can. All right. He says to me, Pastor, you got to come over there and help me. I said, man.
Okay.
I don't know exactly what he thought I could do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, hey, You got it, my man. You impressed me.
It must be something that he found out when you said that. You feel like there's something that you can do.
I hope the best for him. I do. I really hope the best for the children that are there. Because, you know, school started back. School started back now. And I think, when was their first day? Was it today or Friday? I think it may have been Friday.
Possible.
And I see that give the credit to the school board. They are putting more money into tutorial services now. I think they're using some of the pandemic money to provide tutoring services, which is, I hope that works, right? And they're trying to get more teachers.
More teachers. That's a bell ring. More teachers. What is the caliber of teachers are they going to be getting more of? And that's the thing. You know, that's what's so interesting is how the teachers going to be considerable of knowing that, you know, these kids need to be taught instead of just being there for recess all day long. And
that's the truth.
You know, being afraid to make known of some things. I don't know how they go about it. You know, now it's just so much been going on. So, but the kids deserve to be taught. But what are they being taught? What is going to be on the agenda this time? Just like to say, man, we have a lot going on, and these kids deserve the truth. And I just wonder.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just wonder. I have to say that. It's because I don't know. What are they teaching the kids? What are kids going to be excited about once they get there? You know.
Right. You know, I was just saying that. I was kind of echoing what you're saying now, Beth. You're so right, man. As we get back now, and they're actually back in the classroom, is there a greater level that now parents need to be involved? You know what I mean? And making sure that, like you're saying, that the children are receiving the information, the structure and so forth that they need. Now, parents always got to help them. They always got to help them.
Yeah.
But I hope the school system opens itself more now to working closer with parents as partners, you know?
That would be
finding
nice.
Ways.
Yeah, I just say it would be nice if they had a way of bringing more of a learning to the kids. And I know it could be challenging without a doubt. There's so much going on. And how many kids are going to be given something that'll keep them off balance, you know, but still showing up as another number versus teaching them. So if I can give them this, I don't have to teach them, and I just don't think that would be a good thing, because it's time for them to discipline the kids, take time out and go through the real genuine, I mean, from whatever grade that the kid is in, they all got to go to school. That's what they're doing. They step in the first day of school, whichever, second or third day of school, which one it is, now I don't know. But I do know they all going to school. Who's going? Okay, now they're there.
So what
comes after that? They excited about the school just begun, or you get ready for the show notes. Okay, now it's time to teach them. You know, they arrive. Yeah. They've been there 3 days, I think, 2 or 3 days, whichever one it is.
It's going to be interesting, man,
just to see how they unfold.
And you know, watch this. 1 + 1. That math hadn't changed since I've been in the world. How about you?
Same thing.
How about you?
Same.
Has that changed? Yeah. That fact changed.
Same thing.
Same thing.
It'd be the same thing. How do you put that? It's definitely the same.
So why is it so hard to teach 1 + 1, particularly to our children, to black males? Why does it seem that math is so difficult to teach black men? Is it that they can't learn, or perhaps to your point earlier, that there's more that the teacher needs to do to be able to reach them? Now, the truth of the matter is, I don't blame the teacher for what's going on at home. I don't blame the teacher. But that's the perfect reason for the teacher to work very closely with the parents of the children so that the parents can help them deal with that. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I really, really do. And I'm thinking in terms also that it's a possibility with today's way of going about the teaching and the things that's going on now versus way back when. It's the thing where when the teacher and the student get together, you should be straight up some learning and some teaching and learning going on, okay? That's understandable. But I used to hear it some time ago, even that long ago, that when the students show up, the teacher will appear.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's me right there. You say, students here to learn. Where's the teacher?
Yeah.
Where's the teacher? So if the teacher show up, that is, man. That would be great if that was the case.
Well, we know what the Bible said about the preacher now. How can he preach except he, you understand what I'm saying? How can the people hear without a preacher? And how can the preacher preach?
Yeah.
Does that apply to the teacher too? How can a teacher teach?
That's right. The teacher ain't got nothing to work with, man. The teacher just
come on now.
Getting a paycheck and waiting for the bell to ring so they can leave.
My goodness,
doing just what they do versus doing all that they can do. So I don't know. I don't know if they. I think the teachers deserve. You know, they deserve their props, man, and just showing up to be there as a teacher.
Absolutely.
However,
absolutely.
It still boils down to, you know, what is it going to take for the kids to learn? Because I know they've been out of school for countless of months, and just the thought of going back, I don't know if that what they just left is still lingering, you know, and it's going to take them a while to get back adjusted or however that go. But man, it's education is something. You said it, education, man. Education is just what they need.
I was talking about the young, how we started this back in 2016, Pastor, with the lecture series, the original commercial about Pookie, saying that he grew up in the streets. And he, as far as he's concerned, he's his own man, you know? And that mindset real in 2022. But watch this. As much as Pookie loved the streets, the streets don't love them back, do they?
No, they'll welcome them back every day, though, but they just don't, you don't have no knowledge of it, and you just go on with the flow. I picked up the flip side book earlier today, and I seen something in there, and I was like, man, that's amazing. And it's just so prevalent. You know, it's really, really something, man, to know that them kids are, as you said, back in school right now. And what are they going to learn? It's going to depend upon what the teachers bring to the table. Is it going to be interesting to them to know that somebody cares? Or is it just going to be back in school again? Okay. Where do we go from here?
Right. But, you know, I was thinking about the first book, Still High, how you described as a student, you know, you were conflicted. These are my words, of course. But you, as I read the book, I could see how as a young boy, you had the desire and the natural skill for sports, for baseball and basketball. But there were some other things that were pulling you, and those were the primary examples of the hustlers, the dope dealers, the the
right,
dice shooter.
It'll,
you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yes, sir. It'll grab hold to you, man. Before you know it, you'll be locked in it. You don't even know it. And that's how
but isn't that still the case today, Pastor? Isn't that still the case today where where there are other social distractions within the neighborhood? Isn't that still the case?
Yeah,
where young people, you know, you want them to sit and focus and to use their minds to think about logic and math, and but that there are other things on their mind. You know what I mean? That's come out today.
It is, man. It's a lot. It's a lot lined up in that same scenario today.
Mm-hmm.
It is. They can become caught up in the twist, and all of a sudden, you know, that's something that they don't even know because they're caught up in the twist. And to be caught up in the twist, you don't know it. It's gonna be hard to get loose from that.
Well, that's it.
Because you don't know.
That's just it. Because you don't know it.
Yeah.
You know.
That's
if you were hip to what was going on, you probably would do something different, but you don't even know why you did it.
Yeah, you don't even realize it, man. That's what's so amazing. My. The thing of it is. Go ahead, Pastor. See.
No, I'm sorry. I cut you. I'll finish your thought. I apologize.
No, see, where I was going at with the thought of not knowing, you know, it's just like what a person have to deal with when he step up excited and unaware, and then suddenly you snatched up unaware. And that's a prevalent thing that's going on. And that's a plan, though. That's not something that just happened. No, it don't go like that. No, it don't go like that because it's a form of innocence.
Mm-hmm.
See, but when you're innocent, this kid's going back to school energetic, excited, and things like that, and then suddenly they don't even realize what just happened.
Yeah,
don't even know what happened, man. Right. So they be at that point more into it, and it's nothing but just a thought. It's not even that they're doing something that they want to do. It's just something that's a thought, and then suddenly they get a chance to do it, and that's when the lockdown come in without being behind bars.
Yeah. Wow, you said something right there. Did I hear you say lockdown without being behind bars? Wow.
Yeah, that happens, man. Yeah, that right there is a hurting thing to know it, but that's what it is. That's
you know, my son, I thought about that, saying that. My son, he works with the group there, the NSB chapter there, the Black Engineers Group, and they go out of their way to go in Cleveland, inner city Cleveland, Ohio, and to encourage African-American students to be involved in engineering in particular, right, the science.
Oh, man.
And as they – he said that he went to one little community center, and he told the lady, Pastor, he said, I really would like males, but we'll take anybody, okay?
Right.
And he told how many he wanted because they had, you know, they budgeted for so many of them. And so the lady pulled him to the side and says, baby, let me tell you. Now, I can get you all the number you want, but I can't guarantee they're going to be males because they're the hardest one for us to get in here and to stay in this center and so forth and so on. And do you know, in the end, they, out of about 30, they had maybe about 4 young males that came for the. And he said it was a little disappointing. Yeah.
Yeah, out of about 30 of them, about four males.
Only about four were young males, black males.
And yeah.
We're talking about from
yeah.
the projects of Cleveland now, inner city Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah. But, you know, and like you say, he was a little disappointed in that. That just only
yeah.
gave him another reason to do more because he understands
sure.
how to make him feel.
Yeah,
and, he'll probably really get a chance to do a lot more behind that.
Well, I believe
so. That.
But you know, I talked
yeah.
to him about when he was here with one of your camps there, and I said, "Son, the reality is where you need to throw your fishing rod is not in that community center,
yeah.
but you need to go on
yeah.
the block, man. You know what I mean, Ambassador?"
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. And then he got something that he got some material too that are helping because he's trying to get kids in the realm of the engineering. I think is what you're saying, right? Something
that's
about,
right. That's right.
You know, you're bringing forth that kind of teaching. So yeah, he got something that he can share with them to let him use that tool that he have, you know, like in the book, you know, and he can.
Right.
You can point out
right,
some things
right.
to them and let them know why it's a good reason not overlook an opportunity like this. And they may just go off. Ring, ding, ding, bells went off, and suddenly they want to become more interested and go tell another one of their friends, and man, guess what, man? I was one of the four in there. It was just 30 of them in all. It was just but one of the four brothers in there. And man, y'all come next time. You know, y'all come. Maybe if one more guy come. Just to hear, you know, something
yeah.
that would make them say, which one is more important to you? You know, here is a gifted brother that was, you know, used, and then you use that as a point of, you know, here I am, I'm an engineer and I'm gifted at it, and I don't mind showing you, but this is something that happened to a man that, you know, he didn't get a chance to perform what it is that he was gifted at because the trap got him. It is a thing like that. It's kind of just, then you
sure.
go over with the engineer back in the swing of that before you know it. they're interested, you know, and you never know, man. That's something. Or just what he's doing because he was a little disappointed.
Yeah.
He's ready to help them, brother. Yeah, he wasn't.
Here's the thing. It was with the organization, so there were limits as to what he could personally do. I was just telling him that the place, the source that y'all went to get him are not apt to really reach particularly black
yeah,
males and like that.
Right.
You understand? Now, they do better to reach young females, which they had the majority of. And that's what the lady was saying. I can get you plenty of those. But now, when it comes to getting those little fellas, I ain't gonna promise.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna be able to promise, you know. And so, but I wanted him not to be discouraged, and I don't think he was. He was just a little disappointed at the moment. But I was saying to him that the real challenge, and this is not just in Cleveland, Ohio, but this is all over, you know, urban America. The real challenge is getting past the subculture or the ethnic traits or behaviors that distract young people from the learning process and being focused.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? Discipline to learn. That just like playing sports, you got to be disciplined, man, in what you do if you're going to be good at it. Reading
That's
requires
right.
practice. Math requires practice. Science requires
That's
practice.
Right.
And you know
That's
when
it.
You're always running, you see that with little children at an early age. Where they lack structure. They're not used to sitting down for any long period of time, being focused.
Right.
And those are precursors to reading. See? Those are things we can do. That's what I meant about parents now, that children are back to school. Parents being more actively involved and engaged in those schools in terms of determining, all right, when they come from the school, here's how I'm going to help extend on that learning and reinforce what they're learning there, you know, at home.
Right.
I realize everybody don't know that. I get that. I realize everybody don't know that. But it kind of speaks to it. St. Louis, joined St. Louis, we've been talking about really reflecting on how in this sixth year now, many of the same core issues we identified back in 2016 are still prevalent in 2020. And sometimes it makes me feel like we haven't done enough. But I realize it's not a one-man show. There's something everybody got to do something for. But welcome to our open mic discussion tonight. It's open microphone tonight.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's a one-way show, and I get a T when people say when we ain't done enough. So who is the we?
Well, that's a good question. If everybody's not on one accord, there is no we, is it?
No, there's not no one we. Your we start with yourself and your family.
Okay.
So, I hear these black conversations talking about we need to stick together. We need to support each other. We need to buy from each other. That's a bunch of bull crap.
Don't work, never have. Why don't we need to do that?
Because it's not going to happen, because your we is not from the same bunch. That's why it's not going to happen.
So let me ask this question, then, St. Louis, in line with what you're saying. Do you think the same principle idea applies with Italian or Irish or Asian or even Hispanic communities? Do you think they embrace the we concept better?
Individual and have a conversation about them, and people that's in the conversation can contribute what they know about them. But right now I'm talking about black folks, black society, because that's the one I know. What y'all call your people, Negro, blacks, and colored, that's the one that I'm talking about. And people like to throw a wrench in the conversation when they go to talking about what these other ethnic groups do. And they don't mention Nigerians, who are black as Wesley Snipes. Why is it that black Americans have so many problems? Not all of them, but these Nigerians, they don't be complaining.
There's a difference, though. You know that, don't you? Typically.
And don't say it because they come from, and maintain their culture. No, I'm talking about Nigerian Americans.
Yes.
Born
here.
Hold
on 1 second. They're born here, but the generation or two preceding them perhaps was not. And when that generation that preceded them, they left an instruction for them to do certain things. Now, I know what I'm getting at, St. Louis and Basuala, is that historically, even removed from slavery, we're about 154 years from slavery now, right? And the reality is that there's been a breakdown in information from one generation to the next in this present generation in 2022.
You want me to comment on slavery? Let me comment on slavery.
Okay.
Slavery was an indication. Slavery was an indication of some very weak people. Anybody that's weak enough to be caught by your own people and subjugated. Now, when you get to the subjugation, that means that your own people had a problem with you. That's what it means. See, you can't look back into your family and say that, like you're trying to make claim with Nigeria, that one or two generations. No, you got something that's generations, three generations, four generations of this country that's doing very, very well. And not only them, but others too from that continent. I'm talking about people with black skin. But people keep talking about these slaves. These slaves done something that afforded them to end up in the position that they was in. And guess what? That position was not unusual. It was commonplace.
I concur with you. My first book identified that my thesis was that because of sin and disobedience, St. Louis, that the first people that were brought here during the transatlantic slave trade were subject to that. And it did begin over in the continent we call Africa today. So, but it was because of sin and disobedience, I believe. That's my theory that caused. So I wouldn't argue that. However, what I'm saying is if you want to compare Nigerians to those of Afro-American descent, post-slavery, or those who have direct ancestries to slaves, you can see how even though three generations, there's a certain mentality or mindset that is maintained.
Well, but it ain't because of slavery. Hell, all blacks weren't slaves. Now, this is what I hear people say. This is what I hear people say. I ain't saying you. I hear you make some reference to it. People's always saying that blacks is suffering from some slave syndrome. Well, that's a bunch of crap. All black folks were not slaves. Plus, blacks today are mixed. They are mulattoes. They are mixed to a varying degree, from octrones and matrones and so on and so on. So how are you going to account for that portion of your blood? Is that not having an effect of your genetic makeup? It would have to be. So this stuff about blacks are suffering from the remnants of slavery is white suffer just as bad too.
Well, wait a minute now, St. Louis. Now I'm going to put my anthropological head on now, okay? My sociological, anthropological head on in terms of the context of slavery for what I call Negro, black, and color. Now, I agree with you that it's difficult to find the difference between what it means to be black, African-American, Negro, color. You understand what I'm saying? I would argue that they're all generic terms, but they make reference to a course in America for a certain ethnic group of people. And that has evolved significantly. We have more mixed couples now, particularly in the South, than you ever seen historically, particularly in the South. You understand what I'm saying? And so,
well, what do you call mix? Are you using them words again? Because in Africa, if you married into another ethnic group, you was mixed. See,
so
people think when you say mixed, like for instance, when it's in your biblical text, when they say don't give your, I tell you what, when the Cushites talked against it, when Ammon talks against it, he was not talking about white skinned people.
Right,
that's another way that you trick people. They mix. Well, hell, if a Nigerian marry an African American, that's mixed.
Well, let me explain the context.
Now, would you agree?
I can see the logic that you are sharing with us, but let me explain the context of mix that I'm speaking of. And I mean those people who typically are what is often referred to as white and black. I don't like using terms, but for the sake of understanding, let me use that. And historically, I'm sure you know that there was a case where it was illegal for a white male and a black female to be together and vice versa, particularly in the southern states. And when I say mixed, that's what I'm talking about. Sometimes it could be a mix. We've seen a lot of...
It was the same way with blacks, too. Blacks told their daughters don't marry no white. They told their sons don't marry no white.
Yeah, that was the culture.
Right?
Because
am I right?
I would agree with that there was a lot of that.
But nobody never talks about that. They always throw the slant on blacks and whites. Whereas blacks told their kids the same thing.
Sure. I'm not arguing that they didn't, St. Louis. I'm simply explaining what I meant by mixed. Okay? And that is not often the case for individuals that come from places like Nigeria or Somalia or some of those other Eastern countries. When typically they come, and we can speak within the last 50 years, there is a certain cultural heritage, language, and way of life that they maintain. It's interesting we talk about this, guys.
They don't like the mix, too, Ruben.
Let me just say this. One second. Hold your thoughts, Senator. It's interesting we're talking about this because there's a case in Michigan where a father is on trial right now. He's in the court case. It's about killing his two daughters, Pastor Waller, because he did not want them going outside of the – I think they were Muslim. He did not want them dating. And one of the young ladies had a black male that she was American, black American male that she was dating. And he killed both of his daughters, teenage daughters. And
we had a case like that in St. Louis, the mercy killing. Yeah, but let me tell you this. I wouldn't let my daughter date every black man that came up, wanted to date her. I wouldn't want to have nothing to do with their family. You know, it was families that I wouldn't allow my black kids to play with their black kids. You know that? You have to protect your child. You see, when you got families and you do some research on, especially when you're talking about dating and marriage, you don't let your child date any just anybody.
Okay, okay. Well, you know, that's not a common thought in many circles for Negro, black, and colored folks. And I'm not speaking about it.
There lies the default.
Well, now, look, I grew up in the project, St. Louis. And they had some fine little gals in the project, man. Come on, man.
Well, what was you looking for them for? I mean, you just revealed something else. That mindset. That's why I wouldn't let my kids play with them.
I'm a better man.
I didn't take them down there and play in the, on the playground there on Vandeventer off of Natural Bridge with them kids.
I hate what you're saying. And I take where you're coming from. You know, you have a history with us on Talk Straight. And we kind of understand where you come from, your mindset, and how you raise your children. I did tell.
I was raised that way too.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm just saying. Now, there was some fine little mamma jammas around the project.
Well, I didn't look at them like that. I can understand that you do, but you give an example. Yeah, people look at women for. As objects rather than as a personality or as an individual.
No, I appreciated them, man, because many of them in their own way were sweet, honest people, you know what I mean? And they were looking for a way out like I was. You know, they knew what they knew. We all were shaped by our experiences, man. I mean, you know, so I'm grateful.
Within African cultures, Africans, let's start with Nigerians, Yoruba, will not marry Igbo, and they won't marry a African-American. Now, that's not all the cases, but I can only go by what I have conversation.
I understand. But if we could, let's come back to that general discussion we were talking about here now. And what Pastor Waller was talking about, we were talking about how my son in his SB chapter was trying to get more black males involved and encourage them to get involved in, in engineering and science in general. And so they allocated funds for a certain number of pupils that they would be working with. And he went to a certain center, St. Louis.
He went where?
He thought to a certain center in the Cleveland, Ohio area, inner city Cleveland.
Okay.
Community center, and he thought that he'd be able to get the center work with these children on a regular basis, and that he would be able to catch some there. And I'm gonna explain to the point, and then we'll kind of open up the conversation there, because Pastor made some good points there. And what happened was the lady told him that I can't promise you I'll get you. He said he told her first of all, I prefer to have black males. Right, but if I'll take anybody that come, but I would prefer. So he was telling her, I would like for you to go out your way to get as many black males as you can. And she told him, pull him to the side, because he was with some of his colleagues that were doing this. He pulled him to the side, and she told him, she says, well, listen, I can get you 30 children, but I can't promise you if they gonna, you know, you're gonna have a whole lot of male. And as it turned out, it was only four of them that they were able to.
Well, what age frame was that?
They were middle schoolers. So middle school, they're about 12, 13, 14, 15 years old.
Well, you know, and that process should start with the family and the parents way earlier than 12 years old.
And so I was just talking one-on-one with my son. They were telling Pastor Waller, and Pastor Waller knows him, so he knows where his heart is. I was just telling him that he was a little disappointed that he couldn't get more. I said to him, the methodology for recruiting the students, maybe you all want to look at changing, because, you know, you're going to have to go on the street where them Lashawdies are. There's plenty of them out there on the street. Is that right, Pastor Waller? There ain't no shortage of them there. And
well, yeah, it's males out there, but are they qualified, Pastor Waller? Go ahead, and how you doing today?
I'm good, St. Louis. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine.
That's good.
Go ahead, Pastor. What
I was going to say, when you told me about your son Pastor Doctor, how he responded, you know, I got a sense of the compassion that was in him, that he was ready to help somebody that he knew possibly couldn't help themselves. And when you get down to that point, he was very disappointed because he's young at it. He's just beginning to reach out, getting a chance to reach out. And so he's throwing his reel out there wherever, and he just asked them if they would. I prefer males. And he didn't say that by excluding the female. He wasn't excluding them. No. He just said that. And so, I mean, they really told him about, you know, only what they could possibly get. I can get you 30 kids, but it definitely possibly would not be, most males,
right.
You understand? But just because it was four of them, he said he was a little disappointed. And that's the good news right there, is that now he sees that he have a real hunger and he have a real thirst, that he's just willing and ready to help somebody that's not already there. You see, and that's what it sounds like to me, you know, is that he has something to offer, and if somebody's already, let's say if 10 people came there, 10 males came there, and they already was familiar with, he's already trying to teach. But that's not going to give him any incentives because they already know some things, you know. And I can just see where he's coming from when he said that, and when you explain to him where he possibly could find a lot of them at. And and then he like as I said, you have tools to work with, you know, it's just, but that's his personal part of his reaching out. It's like, what can I do to help some kid that may be lingering toward destruction that he may see potentials in? And then he has that piece of material to go with what he already knows. And that can kind of help them to say, oh, man, I listened to him, man. I found out that he knows somebody that went the wrong way, and man, he wouldn't have told his friend. And now his friend want to get to know him. So you never know how that one person could be out of those four kids that he can touch.
True.
And, he got some more friends out there, and all of a sudden he started getting what he's seeking, man. So just let him know to be encouraged, man, and just believe that it's going to work out well for him because he's there. It's like he's stepping out, man. Cleveland Community Center? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's East Cleveland, too, in the hood. But I was going to suggest this to you all, and y'all tell me if I'm wrong about this. I was thinking St. Louis now, and this may not be something that you would be your first thought, but I was thinking that if you went to the juvenile courts where these young males often are in large numbers, right, and as a opportunity for them not to go to juvenile detention, you see what I'm saying? Have them to go through this mentorship and with this engineering focus. What do you think, Senator?
The National Society of Black Engineers had a goal to graduate 25,000 black STEM graduates per year. Yes, well, when they came to realization that just ain't possible at the time, they dropped it down to 15,000.
Okay.
And it made me down less than that. And the reason why is that you don't have a system that's in place that's producing children that would make great stock to become STEM graduates.
Okay.
You can't take a piece of wood and turn it into a diamond.
No. No. Well, what's the plan? How do you do that, St. Louis? That's what I'm saying. I was just suggesting that one way you can capture them is when they already up against the wall because, you know, they may have to.
They ain't
going to
do it because it has showed that that's not going to happen to where it's worth it.
Hmm.
I keep saying it has to start with the family, with that young child. You need
to
expose your child. Get them chemistry sets. Get them electronics sets. Kits. Get them biological kits. Show them by microscopes. Take them to museums. Let them go to university and listen to lectures on various subjects. That's how you start getting a child influenced. Then you have to do an assessment to see exactly where their major skills and ability lies. This ain't no flip of a coin. Why come you don't do the same things that you do in order to seek out those on the basketball court and those on the football field? Why don't you do that with the academics And I'm not saying you. Why come that's more readily done?
No, I get what you're saying. Now, I'm hearing something, Pastor Wallace, that he's bringing up here. Maybe during Christmas, when people are in the spirit of receiving gifts, that could be a gift in the project.
It don't have to be during Christmas time. That we don't limit in the time. It should be every day.
Just follow what I'm saying, St. Louis. At least they'll be receptive to a gift. You see what I'm saying? They're in the spirit of receiving a gift. Sometimes if you're in the hood, and I can say this from experience, and Pastor can as well, when you see people coming in, they could have the best intentions. Your first question is, man, ain't nobody told you welcome around here. You don't have no G-card.
Well, that's because those kids don't respect authority. And they surely in the hell don't respect Santa Claus.
Well, listen, but they'll take Santa Claus gifts, though. Yes, they will.
Yeah, but why does it have to be a gift? Why come it cannot be authoritative direction from a parent?
It's like fishing, St. Louis. The parents will receive the gift for their children, but what they're really getting is a seed, brother man. You see what I'm saying? That's really, you understand. And look, you could get them those science apparatus that you were talking about, puzzles that spark logical processing. I'm talking about young children, preschool age children. Get them manipulatives and you know what I mean? That's all I'm saying. At least you can build a rapport from there out. And it may take longer to get them to. I'm simply saying that's something we can do. We ain't going to give up on them.
Playing basketball, how do they get them to learn how to dribble? Well, then whatever that methodology is, then why come it's not also utilized in getting them to learn how to read and do math?
Okay. St. Louis, let's go to somebody who know that. Coach, what about it, Coach? How do you teach dribbling, Coach?
It's always a starting point. It's always a starting point. You take a person that don't know anything. First thing you want to do, you want to be a teacher. You love to see somebody that don't know anything when they first come.
Okay.
And then you see if they have a hard desire, you know, to want to follow the instructions, and then all of a sudden they do a particular thing that they were shocked after they did it, and all of a sudden, you know, they became more interested in it. And it's just like the juvenile people that's there. You know, out of 10 people or out of 100 people that's there, surely there's one person that's possibly in there that would love to hear something positive, because remember that they're locked up. And I'm going to use for an example. This is a guy right here. I'm going to name him. His criminal was just the other day. And I was glad I went by that. I didn't find out day before yesterday, but it was yesterday. So I went on by there and listened to what they were saying about this guy, which I already knew he was very smart anyway. And you know what they said about this man? They said he was a genius.
Mm.
That's how deep it was. I'm talking about he was tutored people and things like that. He's done a lot of great things in life. I'm talking about things that I'm unable to even mention about him. He did so well. And I was just glad that I was hearing some of the things that they were saying about him. However, he was caught up in the world. They talked a little bit about that, you know, his shortcomings and things of that nature. But I'm just talking about how brilliant he was. But he still got caught up. But that didn't define who he really was or anything. You know, it didn't take away from his powerful relationship with the Lord, you know, because that's a stronghold. That wasn't a sin. That was a stronghold. That's what a lot of people don't know, that that was a stronghold when a person get captured into things like that. Even though he was brilliant, even though he was genius at what he was doing, he would tutor people. He was some kind of guy. So where I'm going with that is that could possibly be some kids while they're young right now. At a place where they can't go out in the streets and do things that they would do, as you were saying. And I think St. Louis was saying some things concerning that it possibly wouldn't work. But St. Louis, let me ask you a question. Out of 100 people, and that's not saying that we definitely know. You know, you keep reminding us that it's not going to work. But what about that it would work? Is there a chance at all that, you know, you would give benefit of the doubt that it's a possibility that it could be someone in there that's willing and ready to learn? Because they feel like somebody came and was concerned about them. That's the same thing about playing basketball. The kid may not know nothing about it, and all of a sudden I come through and make the ball sound off because of a dribble. And they found out, my goodness, man, look how he made that ball sound. I never heard the ball sound like that. And now all of a sudden, he's interested, even though he don't know how to do it. Isn't that a good place to start? Because did you always know what you know now, or did you have to start? How did you learn? You know, even if you didn't play basketball, because I think you big time into the you're an engineer yourself. Is that not accurate to say? Did you know things like that, but did it all start by way of I know everything from the start? Did you not have anybody to teach you? Or did you follow instructions? You know, and so if you give a person a chance, you never know. Maybe one person that'll make it all.
What you're saying is absolutely correct. I've seen people come out of prison and turn their life around at that particular age. But that's more of the unusual than the norm. And see, when you got Nesby trying to get 25,000 graduate STEM, black STEM graduates a year, well, that methodology just ain't hitting it. Because when they go from 25 to 15 and maybe down to 10, that tells you that it just ain't hitting it. It's a process. It's a process that you have to bring out what your child was naturally born with. And you have to see what they're able to do. I started my grandson off in African drum and dance so I could look at his feet work. And I said he would make a good shortstop. Well, and when you get to college, he's playing short. I told him I said, you're going to be an engineer, and you're going to have a business, a second major in business with an energy minor. Well, he done that. Then I said, whatever else you want to be, you can be. Well, he said he want to have a general aviation license. Well, we're working on that. So that's what you got to tell your kids. You don't let a child make up their mind because they always going to choose the weaker and to go the lesser route. And that's why there's a shortage today.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you got to teach them, and so that could be a teachable moment, you know, that a kid, and then they can look back on that and say, man, I'm so glad, you know, that the kid came over here or that man came over here and said something to me, because I wasn't thinking about nothing but getting back out in the street and go do what I always have done. But he put something on my mind. That's a starting point. And that's all I'm saying is that, without the starting point, we got to have a starting point to give them a chance, because you never know. I mean, nobody knew I was going to change St. Louis. Nobody. My community is still shocked. They're still shocked. Most of them are. I mean, of course, it took them a little while longer to get used to it. So I was thinking after so many years, maybe they'd be used to it by now, knowing that I really actually changed. But it's still hard. Because of where I came from and the way I used to live and how I went about it. And it's understandable by me, you know, because even my friends that was around me had a hard time, not because they didn't believe it. It was just a shock to them because they knew me well and they knew I wasn't pretending. They knew I didn't play. They knew I was serious about whatever I would do. So all I'm saying is that even though I shocked the whole city, but it's still, the fact still remains. I had to get started. It shocked me. I didn't even want to display it. I didn't even want to be the person that I became, because I'm thinking, like, what are they going to think of me? What are they going to say? All those things are still on me. But at the same time, I was glad that I did step up to it, because some of my friends changed as a result of that. And then it's preparation for other kids and things that have been watching me. You know, things like that, being an example, a good example, it's a lot better. Even though so many more, and so much more, I would say, and so many people that are still out there that wasn't even around when I was doing what I was doing, and I'm watching them get captured into it. So what do I do? Do I sit back and just say, okay, now they're getting ready to be just like I used to be, or do I reach out? Do I say, okay, let's go down to the ball court and try to get it off their mind for 30 minutes or an hour? I'm just using for an example how you start something. And give them, that's a good point that you're making, without a doubt. But I just like to say, you know, because of the assignment that has been given, I can't neglect the thought that there are people who are doing what I used to do by way of just walking on by as if I don't know what it's about.
Well, you know another thing that you ain't taking into consideration. There are about 18 million K kids under the age of 18 in the United States, black kids. And that was 1 year I recall that numerical number. You're talking about individual attention on an individual. So if you got 18 million kids, now let's say half of them don't need that. So now you're down to 9 million. So that means you got to have 9 million people like yourself to individually attend to one. It just ain't going to happen. It's not going to happen.
One is always better than none.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about one. I'm talking about 9 million.
No, I'm talking about a nine million with one. It's one. Just say for 9 million together.
You're absolutely right. It's better than none. But right now, all you're dealing with is the none.
Yeah, you start with one, though. You always start with one. And then, one, two, that's how it happened. And then all of a sudden, those 9 million that you're talking about, oh, man, that would be awesome, man. Just say 9 million all of a sudden. Because they always, remember, a lot of times kids often do things like this. They see some other kid doing something, and they next thing you know, they start doing it. It can be something positive, like what you're talking about now. You know, things that they have to learn, but it takes somebody that's willing that has something also, like Pastor Doctor and yourself. You know, you're very intelligent. You're highly intelligent. So to see a kid and then to be able to just come here for a minute, son. I mean, you got a way of talking, man. I mean, just think, a person having 10 minutes of some of St. Louis talk, 10 minutes, and this kid didn't have nothing like this on his mind. Suddenly, he got St. Louis on his mind, like, man, he sure did tell me something good. Versus you keeping it to yourself, and you walk on by and see a kid, and you went on the other side of the road like as if the kid is not special, man. St. Louis, you got too much to offer, man. You can't keep it to yourself. It's not fair to yourself.
I do work with kids. In St. Louis, we have the National Society of Black Engineers meet every Saturday, a group at 9 o'clock in the morning at Forest Park Community, no, Florissant and Valley Community College. In the engineering room, parents bring their kids in there. Usually have about 25 at least. And they break out in work session, work programs. At the University of Missouri, St. Louis, starting in September, they have what's called a bridge program, where you have hundreds come there, and they break out into workshops in varying subject matter, from dissecting frogs, biology, engineering, so on and so on. So it is going on. But what I'm telling you, even though with all of that, and that program at UMSA goes from September until about March of the next year, I believe. But even with all of that, you can't produce 25,000 across the country of black STEM graduates.
Well, just keep trying. Just keep trying, man. Just keep taking shots.
You've been made. Just keep it in mind, man. You may see some kid that's not showing up at the location that you're talking about, but you just may see and say, yeah, okay, I'm going to give that. Just going to give him a moment of my time. Just see how he reacts to me. I said again, and I'm going to turn it back over to you, Pastor Doctor. St. Louis has a way of talking, and he's very highly intelligent. Very highly intelligent, not just intelligent, very highly intelligent. Now, you cannot convince me that a young kid would not appreciate 5 or 10 minutes of his time. It all starts because St. Louis did not know all that he knows when he first showed up. Somebody had to teach him, and it had to start in that very moment, in 5 minutes and 10 minutes, and you maybe became more interested in it, and all of a sudden, look what you became.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's all I'm saying. You know, you never know who it could be.
I think
that's what Pastor Doctor do. That's what he's reaching out for. That's why his son got that on him like that, St. Louis. That's why he's like that. You know, he was disappointed because, you know, he's going to Cleveland Center, but he even put in a request. And I'd rather have, you know, it wasn't like he was trying to exclude the little girl.
No,
he
wasn't.
Just that,
no.
He just said, I would like to have little boys, you know, little men. And she gave him gave him some off the top. She said, look, it may not be, no 30 of them, but I promise you, I can get you 30 of them, but it may not be all male. So I'm saying that
all boys.
You know, at least he was able to embrace the thought of what it would have been like to have had close to 30 men versus closer to just one. He had four. So that's a good starting point of knowing that, man, just think if I had a little bit closer to 30. You never know what he's going through right now. But the number one thing I do know he has, he's having compassion. And then to go down to a juvenile center, or either go out on the street or just anywhere other than that community center, because right now, as he discovered, that they're not going to show up right now. But he got that fire in him, and he's young. He got that fire that you probably had in you, St. Louis, when you were that age that he is. You see what I'm saying? And you're ready to just help somebody. So let's just believe that that's going to happen, man. He'll come back with a report. He said, guess
man,
what,
look
Dad?
At the time.
You know?
I hate to cut y'all off. We got about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, Dad.
Oh, man. Yeah, man.
Well, Pastor, let's give St. Louis an opportunity for a final thought, and then you can kind of wrap us up here. I mean, it's a good conversation, man.
Oh, yeah. You know. He's great.
Well, the thing is that numbers, data is the guiding light. If the data don't show, then it's falling short. Then also data shows is that what you are expending and what you're getting out, is it worth it?
That's true. Mm-hmm. That is so
good.
Got to follow it. If you want to be successful,
That's good.
One day, gentlemen, one day, we're going to look up and say, man, look what we were able to do. One of these old days, St. Louis. But thank you so much. Appreciate you, St. Louis, for joining us tonight there. And we're going, the clock's going to run out on us here. But we'll wrap it up there. This has been another episode of Talk Straight. It's been open mic. And these brothers dropped it like it was hot. I appreciate both of you. St. Louis, hopefully we'll see you next week, man.
All right, see you later.
All right, sir.
All right.
Well, Pastor, go ahead and wrap this up, man. That was a good conversation. I was thinking while y'all were talking, man. Bring this to a close.
Man. That's all right, man. That's all right. You know, it's a time where, you know, you keep on pushing and things will come around and you'll get a chance to see the evidence. That's why the Word of God does say that we walk by faith and not by sight. And believing that without faith, it's impossible to please God. So you got to take what you have to offer and put it in motion, and you just wait patiently on the outcome. I yield back to you on this note, Pastor. I guess I say this, man. You know, one of the things that I have learned, if I just walk in patience and start practicing patience, I got a move to make that I hadn't dish the ball out yet, but I'm still dribbling.
Wow.
Remind me when you said something about dribbling. I'm ready to throw a pass to somebody, but I love for them to catch it. I want them to see it come, but I love for them to catch it. So I got that. That was a good thing, man. Is it worth it? Yeah, it's worth passing the ball to somebody. So I'm waiting for that time to come. I yield back to you on that note, brother.
All right.
By faith.
The just must walk by faith and not by sight. Man, boy, I tell you, I hate we have to cut this off. We'll see y'all next All right, little girl. All right, man. All right. Well, look, we'll see y'all next week for another episode of Talk Straight. We thank you very much for a rather robust conversation.
Just what